Ukraine calling.
You spent a lot of time in Donetsk. You got to know the people, the culture, what people were thinking. What did you lose when the Russians took over?
I lost a hotel. I lost a business center. I had a lot of land. I had my flat, quite a lot.
You once told me if you go into business in Ukraine and you think it's going to be easy, forget about it.
My partner was not very clean. I think he must have stolen half of money, at least.
Mohammed Zahor owns arguably the most beautiful building in Kyiv. It is Renaissance Hotel, built in 1900. How long has it been empty now?
At least with us, it's now for 13 years or 14 years, yeah.
Did you feel like you're going to lose all your business?
I think Ukraine is a place where you need to be Ukrainian or you need to be corrupt.
And you have to have good lawyers.
Yeah.
So there's a good argument for being poor. Nothing to steal. Hello, everybody out there. This is Brian Bonner, host of Hromadske Radio's Ukraine Calling. We are broadcasting to billions of people around the world, potentially. So I hope you tune in, especially to this episode, because it's going to be a lot of fun. I am and very interesting because we have one of Ukraine's leading businessmen, Mohammed Zahor, is here. Welcome, Mr. Zahor.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
He is the chairman of the Istil Group. Probably one of the most astute business people in Ukraine. He owned a steel mill in Donetsk that he sold for peak price in 2008. It became, I don't know what the final price was, hundreds of millions of dollars. But then he proceeded to lose most of his fortune because Ukraine is a rough place. And he actually had one of his steel mills taken away from him in the rough and tumble 1990s. Of Donetsk. More to the point, he was my boss for 9 years. He was the owner of the Kyiv Post from 2009 until he sold it to Adnan Kivan in 2018. He saved the Kyiv Post basically from closing because after the global financial crisis, we went from profitable to unprofitable. And the founding owner, American Jet Sundin, sold it. And fortunately, we had a very good 9 years with Mohammed Zahor, but he fired me twice, and we're going to talk about that too. But he had the good judgment to bring me back. Last but definitely not least, he is the husband of Kamali, singer-actress who has a wide-ranging talent, and he is the father of twin daughters, Arabella and Mirabella. His background, he's born in Pakistan. He is a UK citizen, and I reread the story when we first met. Came to Soviet Ukraine in 1974 as a 19-year-old teenager from a well-to-do family, I guess we'd say, in Pakistan. And there his business took off. With all that said, I think I have to start with the war. How, it's the question everybody asks everybody. How are you holding up now? We're 3 years into a war that looks very dangerous with no end in sight. What have you been doing? I know you've been doing some volunteer work. And where have you been? I hope everything is going well.
Well, in the beginning, when the war started, actually, everybody was much more active than today. We have started our foundations in Poland and in Germany. Already had one in Ukraine, and we visited and helped all those refugees in Romania, Hungary, Poland, Germany, and Belgium. We have been doing that work. We have been sending whatever was possible to Ukraine at that time. Slowly, the things went a little bit cold. Everything seems to be changed. It's not the first day of war when everybody wanted to go to the borderline and fight the Russians. So things have changed. Business definitely suffered a lot. We had, let's say, just to take one of our business center, which had 100% capacity, fully occupied, in 2-3 months went from 100 to zero. Then after a year or so, it started picking up, but the prices are now, the rent is like 1/3 of the rent, which what it was used to be. And we are still struggling to fill it to capacity. We are just halfway, I think.
So Rialto Center we're talking about. Yeah. One of the former homes of the Kiev Post. We had many. We were sort of peripatetic and would move every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's at least half full. And that was where Kamalia had a nightclub too, I believe.
No, it's a cafe, actually.
Oh, it's a cafe.
Yeah, okay. It's a cafe. And then the other thing is that you try to help Ukraine, but Ukraine never tried to help you back. And that's one thing I think everybody, every businessman must be complaining. Actually, we took credit for a loan from the Alpha Bank.
Yes.
And to be very frank, we were having very nice relationship with them, very businesslike, etc. They understood the problem of that you don't have any tenants, okay, don't pay now, pay later, whatever. And then the bank was nationalized and things changed completely for the NBU or for the Sense Bank. The war is over. They want everything backtracked to just before the war when everything was good, when we were paying them hundreds of thousands of dollars and interest and paying back the principal and all those things. And these are the things, actually, during the wartime, everybody is suffering. So they need to listen to us also. If war is finished, okay, it's good. But the country is going toward bankruptcy, and they are thinking that our loan is not very good or it's not non-performing loan. How it could be non-performing if you are getting your interest and you are getting some principal, but if you want to have your principal, 100,000 or 150,000, we are not making that kind of money, and it's not our fault actually. I didn't start this war.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you once told me if you go into business in Ukraine and you think it's going to be easy, forget about it. And you would know this, I think, above most business people in Ukraine. I've always wanted to ask you many things about your experience in Moscow, in the Donbass. Looking back, you spent a lot of time in Donetsk. You got to know the people, the culture, what people were thinking. Why is it that that region became so susceptible to being taken over by Russia, and other places like Kharkiv and Odessa fought back and fought off the Russians? Did you see that this was possible back then in the wild 1990s?
Never thought about that, actually. I never thought that these people are... Well, there were sympathies toward Russia, but it was just like maybe a German has sympathy to some German-speaking people in Zurich. It's that kind of... Nobody is expecting that Switzerland will take over part of Germany or vice versa. So that was kind of friendship. It never to be. In Crimea, the things were different. They considered themselves to be Russian, but never in Donbass. I spent half of my life there. I was a student there. I lived with student in dormitory, and I have never heard something that they want to annex themselves with Russia. How it happened? Well, I don't know. It happened maybe due to this the lady. I don't remember the name. She recently came back and talked about the Russian speaking soldiers in the Ukrainian army also, and tried to undermine them as well. So at that time, She also came back to after the immediately after the revolution, the second revolution. She told that all the Russian speaking people, they are, I don't know, they are perverts or they are bandits or whoever they are, but they are not. In fact, people thought that they were taken or overtaken by the Western Ukrainian, and there is no place for the Eastern Ukraine. So some of the people, not everybody, a lot of people, they just ran away from there. So a lot of my friends, my people, the only people I know who left there, they had old mothers, fathers, something, or they were not able to travel or whatever. But all the people who had sympathies for Ukraine, they just moved out from there.
When was the last time you were in Donetsk, Donbass?
Maybe 2009, 10.
2009, 10?
Yeah.
You lost some businesses.
I lost a lot of business. I lost a hotel. I lost a business center. I had a lot of land. I had my flat. I had other businesses also. A lot of real estate. And in Lugansk area, I had a coal beneficiation plant. So quite a lot.
Oh, my God. My blood would boil. But I've never had the money you had. So it all seems like a dream to me. Now, at your peak, I don't know what your fortune was. You can tell us if you want. But I assume it was after you sold the steel mill.
Yes.
In 2008. Before we get to what happened after that sale, what was it really like in Donetsk in the 90s? I mean, we hear it was wild, lawless, violence, gang war, businesses stealing from other people. You know, Yanukovych, Akhmedov, all those Donbass people were running around there. How did you manage to rise up to the top in that environment?
Well, I was lucky, actually. I was in the business, which was capital intense, and the payback period was very long. So at that time, everybody there was interested in getting into casinos or the liquor making factories and things like that. Where
short-term profit.
Overnight, they can make their returns. So that's why till we have invested and turned that mill into a piece of art, rather.
Right.
Nobody actually paid attention on us, what the hell we are doing in that region. And once that thing has done, then they started looking at us and an object of raid or whatever.
And you had two. One was stolen?
No, it was one and the same case, actually.
It was the same.
Yeah.
It was the same.
Yeah.
Okay. But you were able to sell it. And, of course, you told me that you saw Chinese were going to flood the global market with steel. So you got out at such a high price. I forgot what the sale price is. You can tell us. But the guy who bought it from you, or the company that bought it from you, even went bankrupt.
Yeah. Mr. Vadim Varshavsky, he was parliament member from Russia.
Right.
And he used some Alpha Bank's money to buy the steel mill.
Yeah.
And his problem was because when I hired people, I brought, you know, my friends Abid and Farooq and all those people. I worked with them at Pakistan Steel, and I knew how good they are. And I paid them very high price at that time. I've been paying them, each of them, about $15,000 a month.
Right.
And when I sold the steel mill, I told this guy that these are the people actually who can run it for you.
Right.
And they are not cheap.
Right.
So you have to keep them. But he was kind of penny wise and pound fool. So he started looking for some cheap replacements. He got some from Moscow, from other places for $2,000-$3,000. But what these guys started doing, that they started stealing the money from him. And he never saw even a penny of profit, because everything was, they were just getting the cuts from the buyers.
That's interesting. Now, you also spent a lot of time living in Moscow, right? How many years altogether?
About 13 years.
Did you see this attitude towards Ukraine, that it's not a real country? That
Never. It was very normal.
Brotherly.
Yeah.
So both shocked you, okay.
Yeah.
If you had the Midas touch in steel, you did not have the Midas touch when you were investing in other things. What happened now that you have the ability? Because a lot of I think you told me you lost most of your fortune. But you're still pretty well off.
Still okay.
I think. Okay, I don't worry about. We don't have to take up a collection for Mohammed. What happened? You just got into areas that you didn't know about, or the market, or how do you look back on that now?
If I look back, and if I had the chance to turn the time machine back, So of course I could have, I would have took the money and run. That would I would have done.
Put it in the bank and
yeah,
been a billionaire. Yeah.
But I tried to invest in the items I think which were not ahead of the time. Rather, I must say. So I invested in this Pavirnes TV.
60 million.
60 million, yeah. My partner was not very very clean. I think he must have stolen half of money at least. And we were buying these, what do you call it, the Champions League rights, etc. for top dollar. Well, we don't have any subscription. So people were for watching it for free, almost free. So that we have lost. We lost this, the Savik Schuster Studios also. It was a loss-making thing. It turned out to be a place-selling venture when people were paying money just to be on the show.
So Savik Schuster Studios, that's no longer yours?
No, no. So we sold it later just to get rid of it. And then we had the most, actually, the best studio.
It was very good.
Yeah, we spent $15 million on that studio, but nobody came to us to do things over there because we were different than the others. We were not offering them under-the-table cutbacks, payback money, things like that. So I think Ukraine is a place where you need to be Ukrainian or you need to be corrupt. Then you are a successful businessman. But if you want to do your business in a normal way, this is not the place for you.
You speak from experience. Extra TV, did that make you any money?
No, we lost money there as well.
We know also Mohammed Zahor owns arguably the most beautiful building in Kyiv. It is Renaissance Hotel is still out there. And it's a Renaissance era architecture, right? Built in 1900, used to be called Leipzig. We wrote about it. Some people think it's cursed. Hey, we'll talk to the owner himself. But I do remember this building when I first came to Ukraine in 1996. I said to myself, my God, if I was rich, I would buy that building and remodel it and make it into the best hotel that the world has ever seen. I failed, but I did work for the guy who bought it and started the renovation. What went wrong there, and for how long is it going to sit empty?
We bought the building, and like you, I had I was dreaming about that building. And once I was in Geneva, and BNP Paribas actually showed me this building there, that it is for sale. But that time, the price tag was 120 million for this building, and then in 2009-10 it was up for 36 million. So I thought it's a good deal, so I bought it, and then we went to EBRD, and with EBRD we agreed that we are going to make it a hotel, and EBRD agreed to give us $30 million, and. And then we invested all our money, which was more than 60 million. We invested, and then turned out this 2014. And EBRD, by that time, gave us only $5 million. They asked us to return that $5 million, and they just backed out and said that Ukrainian hotel market this hospitality market is not as good, that EBRD, and they suddenly became a commercial organization which looked for the profit as well. And so they just walk out.
Yes.
And since then, this thing, because we spent all our money.
Right.
We were looking for either sell this thing or have a partner. We never found one. Nobody is willing to invest there. Since then, the things were going bad to worse. And then came COVID, then came this war. So we are still looking for some partner, or we are still looking for some buyer for the building. Because this is such a brilliant piece of art, actually, in the middle of town. And just standing there.
How long has it been empty now?
At least with us, it's now for 13 years or 14 years. Yeah.
Don't buildings deteriorate inside?
It does. Inside is okay. It deteriorates mostly from the outside, in fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've been inside. It's still okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think I speak for everybody. We hope you get that back on track. You're a businessman at heart. What parts of your businesses are still making you money?
Well, our business center was doing well.
Rialto.
Just before the war. It wasn't doing very well in the early days. It was doing very well, actually, when we built it.
Right.
We bought everything very expensive, in fact.
Right.
We bought the ruins for $25 million. We put $35 million in there. And I must say that not all of the money went into the construction, because either our partners or somebody else, somebody was spending the money as well. So, which is quite normal in this part of the world.
Right.
So everything what we made, so we have discounted actually those things, because if I have spent $60 million on the business center, then today its value could be 30.
Right.
Yeah, so things have gone down a lot, it's basically due to the corruption problem, because everybody goes after you. You remember maybe the case of that land which we bought it from,
right?
Not from the Ministry of Defense, but Ministry of Defense has sold to someone, and he sold to us, and then after that we had three or four raids. We have all the court cases, etc. We fought them, and it should be clean now. But then recently we heard that somebody else is now eyeing on that piece of land. So in Ukraine, you have to be on alert all the time,
and you have to have good lawyers.
Yeah.
So if you're rich, wealthy, and you have something somebody wants, you're a target.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a good argument for being poor. Nothing to steal. You also told me once, you said you can't be emotional about any business, but I think I detect when you bought the Leipzig, the hotel, Renaissance, that you were a little emotional.
Well, not emotional, actually. We did our calculation, and at that time, I think the face value of the hotel would have gone up. Because I live in London, and I know the hotel market there.
Yes.
They are hardly making 1% yield.
Yeah.
But the face value keeps on going up and up and up. So Qatar Investment buys from the UAE fund and this and that. So they have been playing this ping pong among themselves, and prices are going up and up.
Right.
But if, let's say, Grosvenor House in London, which was sold maybe for $700 or $800 million, and if you look at the income, then they need 10 generations to make money as a business out of that, hotel. There is something else. So people buy the thing, make it work for someone who is looking for the trophy asset, and sell it to them and make money on the sale, not on the day-to-day operation. In Ukraine, unfortunately, we don't have both of these things right now. But I'm sure that once we finish this hotel, its face value will go up. I will never get my $95 million, which I've put in there.
You will get it back.
I will not.
No.
I will not. Maybe in those days when the Party of Regions, they were stealing money here and there, then maybe some procureur might have bought it from me for $100 or $150 million. But I think today the things are a bit not like that.
So, I mean, do you have a profitable business now?
Well, we have. We have a couple of businesses.
Manufacturing or?
Manufacturing, yeah.
In Ukraine?
Yeah.
And then the rest is the investments that you've had. Speaking of emotional investments, I hope it must have been the Kyiv Post when you bought us in 2009. It was the first year we were unprofitable, so you were unlucky there. But I remember you talking that we're not in it to make money. Why did you buy it in 2009. Thank God you kept the team, including me. In 9 years, were you happy with the way everything went? And why did you sell it in 2018?
Well, first of all, in 2009, I bought it because it was a purely a community service. Yeah, because to me, Kyiv Post was just like the building at Proryeznaya. So it was, we have our hearts attached to this newspaper. And when I heard that they are planning to close it or whatever, so that was the time I said, oh, this thing should not be closed. And so that was purely for the community, for the expat community who have been reading that newspaper and who have done nothing wrong, actually. So I just wanted to, it was just a payback to the community, which has been quite good to me all the time when I had problems.
Despite the problems, yes.
Yeah. Back, actually, when I had problem with my steel mill, Kyiv Post at that time actually wrote articles, news, etc.
Yeah, I think you even told me, hurt my feelings a little bit. You said it was better before I came back. They did a lot of good investigations in the beginning from 1995 to 2008. I was an avid reader myself.
Yeah, so we, and then we tried to actually expand it. Maybe that was not the right thing to do, into other languages and try to increase the readership. Maybe that wasn't correct, but we did it. Actually, we wanted to do it once again for the community and for the actually local people who have been reading some crappy newspapers. So we wanted them to read also some quality news and quality in, investigative journalism. So that was then. And so, of course, we have been hit hard by all the governments, whether they were first in the opposition and then went to the government or vice versa. Everybody disliked us and everybody wanted us to write something good for them. And we have been writing everything which was bad. Of course, we were writing good, whatever was happening in the country. But naturally, I bought this newspaper and I gave all the liberty to the newsroom or the editor. Write, if you see something wrong, go ahead. And we had the problem with Mr. Firtash also. We fought with him.
Let's talk about that. And I have to say, as the chief editor under Mr. Zahor, that was true. We had more independence and freedom than most newspapers in the world, including in America. As publisher, he could have interfered in the opinions we took, in the coverage we chose, and in the people we hired. He didn't. And that's to his everlasting credit, and that's why the Kyiv Post, during his watch, won many international, acclaim, awards, and was here to be a reliable source for the revolution of dignity, and for the start of Russia's war, which is going on 10 years later. But we had our rough times, and I'll let you decide how much you want to talk about that. And we can talk freely about Yanukovych because they're all in Russia. And Mikhail Prisezhnuk, who precipitated my firing on April 15th, 2011. I remember that very well. The agricultural minister under Yanukovych is also fleeing corruption charges for stealing hundreds of millions of dollars. They're all gone. Do you recall the time, leading up to that, where they started putting pressure on you because of what we were doing? Walk us through how bad it got, what you felt you had to do about it. Did you feel like you were going to lose all your business because of this?
Well, basically, all those guys, they were bandits. It's a bunch of dacoits, actually, at that time running the country. We were very brave, myself included, that I didn't listen to them. They have asked for so many times through Michael Morozov or other people that this thing is not good. I remember one of the article on his son's PhD or so, and he was friend of Michael Morozov. And then they tried to start it, start something, and so I've been getting all these you can call it threats. Your business will suffer, or this or that, not directly from someone, but through maybe Michael, through some other people, that this is not good or that is not good. If coming back to the incident, actually, both of us think that we were right on our position. Everybody thinks that I have fired at that time because you published that article and you should not have published. And I think that this was not the case.
Mm-hmm.
My case was that these guys, they called me that this Precisionuk is in China and he will come back and he will reply to certain things. And to me, the story was not complete. And it was our side of truth, and there was nothing from their side. So we should have waited one more week, and then you can publish the story. We agreed on that, actually, in the night. But something happened during the night. I don't know. People think that CIA called you, Mr. Brian Bauer, go ahead with the story, which I don't believe, but people do talk like that.
we should have only been so lucky to have the CIA behind us.
Yeah.
And I didn't discourage that rumor because if people thought powerful people were behind us, better for us. But you and I know there was nobody behind us.
And that was the reason. That was the only reason of firing there. It has nothing to do with that article. It has nothing to do. It was just an office matter when a boss tell his subordinate not to do something and subordinate does it at his own will. That's it. But it became such a huge scandal that I even bought to it, that and I wanted this thing to continue. If I just wanted to get rid of those problems and Kyiv Post, that was the right time to do that, actually. I said, okay, they don't want to work, let's finish it.
Right.
But I wanted the things to continue. And that's why I went ahead and I say, sorry, if you didn't get me correctly, then this was the reason, and the comeback. So everybody came back.
We've talked about that many. I felt I did the only thing I could do. And you felt that you did the only thing you could do. But as gentlemen, within 5 days, we had achieved the compromise and made an agreement. And the paper never stopped coming out. The next edition came out. So that's to your credit, because, as we learned later, the owner could crush the Kyiv Post. Now, I know that you were looking to keep the oligarchs away from people who would want to suppress our freedom of speech, away from this. You didn't want to sell it to anybody like that. And you found a good buyer in Adnan Kivan. And I agree that we had pretty good years. It ended very badly. Were you surprised by the way it ended, firing the entire staff?
Just before Kivan, actually, this newspaper, everybody wanted to buy it from me just to kill it. And I did not want that thing. Everybody who came to me and asked about, you want to sell this? And people were coming from different areas. And I said, no. Well, okay, I want to sell it. It's a business. If you want to buy, okay, buy it. But why do you want to buy it? And then, of course, that person didn't tell me, but from some places, people told me, well, they want to buy it in order to just turn it into, once again,
PR,
mouthpiece of something else.
Whoever the owner is.
Yeah. And even with Kurchenko, our things went quite ahead, and also he offered something, and I didn't sell. And then the latest one was somebody wanted to buy this newspaper and present it to Poroshenko. That's how it was presented to me, in order to, because Poroshenko was not very happy, although he used our platform for his own becoming the president. He used us.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have called him so many times. He has been a speaker on our conferences. And
right.
Yeah.
The first Tiger Conference was yeah. Mikhail Saakashvili of all people.
Yeah. So the problem is that opposition, when you are in opposition, you show yourself that you are the reformist.
Right.
And once you just across the table, you go on the other side, you are a totally different person. You are doing the same thing against which the newspaper or myself or you, we were all so vocal.
Right.
And when we tell these things about the people who have moved to the other side, he become offended.
Right.
And that's what happened to Poroshenko.
Yeah, he did not like us.
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted me fired under you and under Kivan. What about Kivan?
So I had an offer, quite a good offer. But I came to know that this is the reason is just to give it to Poroshenko as a gift on his birthday or whatever. And then I don't know what's going to happen with the newspaper, of course. And then Kivan, out of blue, he came out and he wanted to buy the newspaper. And he was a businessman. I didn't know him. And my first thing was, why Ashubhai? Because I just thought that this is somebody sending someone again just to buy it and kill it. And so we sat down, we agree. I say, he wanted this new, he had the understanding that he has been, I think, followed by SBUs and case were being created against him. And so he wasn't the happiest person on earth at that time. And he thought that with the help of Kiev Post and because the American embassy and UK embassy and other embassies, they like Kiev Post very much, he might get some support for his business. To me, it looks like that was the only reason that he bought it, although he has other TV channel, etc. But these are small channels, but he wanted it. But we agreed that he's not going to do anything bad with Kiev Post, and he kept his promise for some time. And he invested a lot also in it.
That's true.
So I was actually happy that I have passed it on into good hands. You were there, so it was another guarantee. Everything is going on well. And like for everyone else, firing the whole team was as shock as for anybody else in the community.
I don't know if I could have changed history. I probably should have called you and told him that this was good, that he was planning to do this. And I had thought that that's a whole another long story, but it continues today. It's not the paper we had, but it does continue today. And you also know it wasn't all smooth sailing. We started throughout that, and he continued to get political pressure. He even offered to sell it back to you once, and you didn't want it back.
Yeah, because I was out of it. I had 9 years of stress, which I took.
Right.
And I thought that I'm not the only person, because whenever we had problems, any problem, and I'm the person, actually, I want to do my business cleanly.
Right.
And I was looking forward to any of these diplomatic missions, actually. Nobody came and nobody told me that. And everybody knew that the problems I'm having is because of Kiev Post. If I would have bought to them, I might not have any problem at all. So,
would you ever buy it under any circumstance?
Again?
Yeah.
I will not. I'm out of...
You're out of things. It.
Yeah, I'm out
of the media business.
Yeah.
Why is it, do you think, that all Kiev Post 3 owners are foreigners? We have an American, Pakistani, and Syrian, and no Ukrainians.
Well, first of all, in Ukraine, they have a lot of other newspapers.
Right.
And which are in Ukrainian or Russian, and a lot of more reading, yeah. I would not suggest even that some Ukrainian will come out and he will become such a revolutionary that he will try to say something against his own government.
Right.
The problem is that he might take it over and tell these things to this government. But when he will come to power, this paper will be telling something totally different. So it was maybe a short-term newspaper which might be doing the same thing we have been doing for years.
Right.
But later on, it will become the part of the government and it will become their mouthpiece.
I have that theory too. I mean, I think that the foreigners had more deeper appreciation of maybe freedom of speech and were maybe a little bit more protected. I don't know if it's true or not, from pressure. But that's history. You know, we saw some of our best days under you. As you mentioned, Dimitri Firtash took us to London for a libel suit. We won. We defeated him. He's also another one in exile on bribery charges in America. But he's managed to play the Austrian legal system to stay in Austria. So we had our battles, and we won a lot of them, and we lost some. I mean, I guess in wrapping up, I mean, you've done a lot of community things, and one of them is UNA. Will we ever see that again? This is the yearly Ukrainian National Awards, the Music Awards.
Well, we did it last year. There was a UNA last year. This year on the 23rd of May, we are again doing it.
In the Palace? October Palace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last year we did in the October Palace.
I would like an invitation.
You will certainly get one.
Okay. And the final thing, I mean, I think that we're all, I know you spend time in London, Dubai, and Ukraine. How do you think this war is going to end?
You know, this is something I've been asked by BBC and Voice of America and Arab News and all these things. I really don't know. I don't know. With such kind of, let's say, help coming to you, which is like today it's coming, tomorrow it's not coming. Today Congress is in your favor. Tomorrow the Republicans are against. So this is not kind of thing, actually, which one would expect. I'm not fully, actually, justifying the Ukrainian system as well. Because I think there were wrong things on their part also when the Americans were trying to tell them, don't spread all the things on our huge border, go systematically from one place to another and so on. And they decided that they are the generals and nobody else know how to fight the war, etc. So they are also at fall. And if the aid is not coming, there's no way, how zealous we might be or how patriotic we might be, but we are not going to win this war without the support of West and America and NATO and other countries.
Okay. Mohammed Zahor, you were a great boss and a great protector of free speech and freedom of the press in Ukraine during your 9 years owning the Kyiv Post. It was a privilege to serve as chief editor. And I wish you, Kamalia, Arabella, Mirabella, Armand, Tanya, all your family, your friends, my former colleagues, actually, at Istil Group, all the best and great health and wealth.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. It was good to see you.
That's it for this week on Hromadsky Radio's Ukraine Calling. I'm Brian Bonner. Please check out our YouTube channel or read the transcript of our conversation on Hromadsky Radio's website, or you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for this week. We'll see you again next week. Thank you so much.
Ukraine Calling.